So last week we started a new series and we are calling it Soul Journey. And so last week we talked about, we kind of introduced the subject matter. And so we were talking about just imagining that you are looking yourself into the mirror, right? So those who were not here last Sunday, I want you to kind of imagine that you are looking into the mirror and then asking the question, who am I? And then try to find the answer. So when you look into the mirror and ask that question, what do you find? You find that there is this body, right? Very obvious, this thing we call body. And then if you can contemplate further, you find out that there's something besides the body, something that thinks, that feels, right? That perceives the world. And then you realize, okay, there is this thing called mind, right? So there is this body, there is this mind. And if you were to further contemplate, continue your contemplation, then you will realize that you're having the experience of the body and mind. When you realize that, there'll definitely be a smile on your face. It's a very profound realization that there is body, there is mind, but there is experience of it. There is something that has the quality of cognition. You know, there's that cognition that there is this body and mind. What is that cognitive faculty? What is that experiential faculty? That's consciousness. Okay, so now you know that there's this body, mind, and consciousness. Three things, right? You're basically trying to find the answer to your question, who am I, right? And so you have reached to this level, body, mind, consciousness, you know? Then comes the tricky part. Because this body is so intimate, so personal, right? I mean, you can feel it, you can see it, touch it, you know? Mind also, so intimate. That thinking, you know, you feel like, oh, I'm thinking, right? This thought is there, you know? Perception, you know? So intimate, so personal, that except for the exception of the sages, except for the exception of the enlightened masters, we assume that we are the body, mind, consciousness. You just grasp it. Because it is so personal, it is so intimate, we feel I'm the body, I'm the mind, I'm the consciousness. Bang. We have clung to it. That clinging, that identification with the body, mind, and consciousness is what we call ego. I am the body. You're identifying with the body. Ego. I am the mind. You're identifying with the mind. Quote unquote, ego. I am the consciousness. Ego. If you simply observe body as body, mind as mind, consciousness as consciousness. Not my body, my mind, my consciousness. Then you're in touch with the soul. You see that subtle difference between ego and soul? Phenomenologically, We can also say that soul is simply a term used to denote the interdependent phenomenon of body-mind-consciousness. A collective term to describe that there is this thing called body-mind-consciousness. This being, you know, the beingness here, it's a bundle of body-mind-consciousness. So looking at that bundle as it is, not that is as it appears to be, you know, that's soul. It is as it is. It is me. That's ego. That's the main difference. So our journey is from ego to soul, basically. That's the soul journey. It's the journey which brings that ultimate freedom. Ego is the subtlest imprisonment. Psychologically, we call it delusion. If you think there is an individual soul, that's also ego. Guys, there is no individual soul. There is only soul.
Right. What happens?
Sure, that's a good question. But first I want to clarify my position here. What I'm saying here, please take it as a hypothesis. Please do not accept it. Neither reject it. Give it a 50% chance. Just give it the benefit of doubt. I want you to investigate it. Do not accept, do not reject. Investigate. So whatever I'm saying, it's only a hypothesis for everybody. It's very important. And then you find out whether that hypothesis stands its ground or not. That's your job. That's the soul journey. So coming back to your question, what happens to mind and consciousness, right? So if there is ego, then you would think that there is reincarnation. That this something called mind and consciousness, after birth, as an entity, takes another birth. Okay? So there is this sense of identification with it. So when you say there is reincarnation, then there is ego. When you say there is rebirth, then there is no ego. Body, mind and consciousness takes rebirth. It's a phenomenon of transformation. There is no you, there is no individual soul that is being born and dying and being born again and dying and born again. There is only soul that is being born and dying and born, being born and dying, being born and dying. So once and for, completely remove the thought of reincarnation and introduce yourself to the thought of rebirth. Very important. Again, hypothesis, please. Because everybody is coming from different traditions, from different thoughts, different sanskaras, and so it's important to... I'm asking you to give me a chance, obviously. So that's very important. So that's the difference between being soulful and not being soulful. Being wise or being unwise.
So in rebirth there's always a brand new body, mind and consciousness in rebirth?
Transformed. Right, transformed.
Transformed.
So not brand new, it's transformed. For example, I'll give you an analogy. What would be a good analogy? This is a very difficult question.
It so, is?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So it's kind of the most important question.
Most important question. Yeah.
Like you say, soul dies. So soul also dies and liver.
Correct. Right. It's not you. It's not.
But if there is no individual soul, how can the soul die and be reborn?
It's just a phenomenon of transformation. Here is an analogy. Milk, okay? And I think we've talked about it few several weeks ago or something. Milk. Milk turns into curd, right? It's a phenomenon of transformation. Milk has turned into curd.
Yogurt,
right? Milk, it's not like you cannot say milk is dead and now there is something new called yogurt. It's just a transformation. Milk has turned into curd. Curd turns into what is it called?
Butter,
right? Curd turns into butter. Butter turns into ghee. A phenomenon of transformation. You cannot say the same milk has moved from milk to curd to butter to ghee. You cannot say that. Although the essence is there. Essence meaning it started with milk, but it is not the same thing that is transmigrating from milk to curd to butter to ghee. It's not the same thing. It has completely transformed. If you were to find milk in your curd, you will not find it. Period. If you were to find curd in your butter, can you extract curd from the butter?
No.
If there was something that was non-changing, if there was something that was fixed, like individual soul, then you would be able to extract it, right? You cannot extract butter from the curd from the butter. Can you extract butter from ghee? You can't. If there was some fixed entity, which like individual soul we say, or a person, you know, then you would be able to extract it, right? It's just our deep, deep attachment to sense of self that leads us to believe that we are dying, being born, dying, being born, dying, being born. So,
Sam, in your model, I mean, in terms of if you take your model and apply it to the stories of children in India and really across the world that have had, you know, they seem to have recollection of past lives.
Right.
From your model, how do you get to the carrying of those memories,
right,
and that individual entity that witnesses the universe or observes the universe? Mm-hmm. How is that carried across?
Right. In fact, there are known stories of children especially, because children don't lie, so you can trust their data. So children recollecting their past life experiences. Absolutely. It's a known fact. It's actually an established science at University of Virginia, right?
Ian Stevenson,
right. It's not the person who has transmigrated from this birth to that birth. It's those memories. But because we are not introduced to the soul, we realize that it's that same Mr. or Miss X that has transmigrated. It's just a phenomenon of memory transmigrating from this birth to next birth.
You were talking about mind and soul.
Right.
Consciousness. Mind is like a thought, thinking, right? If there's no body, there won't be new thinking, but the thinking, once you've had the thoughts,
right,
it's in the universe. It's not dying. I'm just saying something. And the same as consciousness. Your experience, there are no new experiences, but what you have experienced is not dying.
Right.
So probably the body dies, but the consciousness and the mind doesn't die.
Even body doesn't die. Actually, death is a really misleading term. Basically, it's all a phenomenon. Transformation. It's a phenomenon of change. That's all it is.
That doesn't sound too good. It's like you're saying you're carrying your memories from one time to lifetime.
You're not carrying. The delusion is carrying the memories. For example, if you are enlightened this life, okay, there are no memories to be carried forward. And what is that enlightenment? It's removing that glue. What is the glue? Glue is ego. ego is like a glue, it's stickiness, it has the quality of stickiness. What it has done is it has glued all the memories together and created a delusion of a person. All the memories, all the samskaras, all have turned into a mental formation which we call I, quote unquote, you know. That's why you feel separated from each other. You know, you think, I think I am Sudhir, because the ego has kind of glued everything together, and then it feels now separate from you and you and you and you.
The rebirth is like waves forming from the ocean.
Absolutely.
And they finally recede into the same sea, and new waves
new
form.
Waves come. That's now, beautiful.
Why must this rebirth happen? Why must rebirth happen?
Because of that glue, because of that attachment, because of the ego. When ego is dissolved, there's no transformation left, right? All the glue has gone away, all the knots have been removed, everything is dissolved. So
that
it's
would
like,
be the end of rebirth?
That would be the, right. But end is also another misleading term. That is the end of suffering, that's the end of ignorance. That would be a better way. But I mean, just look at ourselves. Why are we suffering so much? If you were to analyze that question and analysis, do it lightheartedly. Don't test the cow dung to find out whether it is cow dung. Okay? Lightheartedly. Like I said, diligent effortlessness. Okay? But without analysis, you cannot do anything. If you don't like the word analysis, use the word diagnosis. You know? I mean, if you were to go to a doctor, you want a doctor to diagnose your disease, right? Diagnose the problem. The more there is diagnosis, the better chance of recovery, better chance of solution, right? Our aim is that only. We are trying to diagnose the problems, the cause of suffering, pain, unhappiness, misery, imperfections, whatever it is, you know? We're trying to analyze, diagnosis, so we can find the ultimate solution. Such a solution that it completely uproots the problem. Never it arises again, you know. That's
actually a wonderful metaphor to use, because I work in medicine and I've always tried to use that. The one interesting thing to remember about diagnosis is it's not always perfect. It's not black and white.
Right.
If a patient comes and they don't quite know what sort of cancer or disease, they do what is called the differential diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Basically, all that means is that they search for the clues of things it is not. They'll take x-rays, well, it's not this. They'll take lab tests, it's not this, so they can move in on what they think the true diagnosis is. And that's actually a nice way, in terms of you talked about not accepting what you say, but thinking about it logically and analytically and moving into the truth.
Truth, absolutely.
And one of the things that I'm still kind of stuck on in terms of this, what if anything survives death is, from physics, we know that somehow our consciousness affects an experiment. It's called the double slit experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's truly nothing that is self-aware or conscious, how does it affect these experiments?
Right.
So to me, I think that there's like this, at the very bottom, there's a sense of, you said witness, and I use that word,
right.
Or the observer.
Observer, yeah.
And they use that a lot in science.
Observer is not separate from observation.
Yeah.
And that's where the quantum mechanics fails.
Yeah.
You know, so we need a new form of quantum mechanical way of looking at things, where the observer is incorporated into the observation, which is consciousness. And so it's a wonderful new development. But coming back to analysis, you know, if we were to analyze the main problem behind our suffering, our pain, imperfections, whatnot, the ultimate cause is this ego, this identification with the body as my body, mind as my body, my mind, consciousness as my consciousness. Ultimate, I'm saying. There may be many immediate causes, intermediate causes, proximate causes, pre-nascence causes, post-nascence causes. There are many kinds of causes and conditions, but the ultimate cause is ego. And unless you uproot that, you cannot solve the problem forever, right? And so our aim is to completely eradicate, to remove that problem, to remove that cause. So if you were to analyze yourself, the ultimate cause is sense of separate self. You feel you're separate from others, you know? If we were to train ourselves to feel one with everybody, you know, then you see what happens. Miraculous things start happening. Just that sense of oneness, beingness. And that's really what the reality is, you know. We are really human beings, you know. It's not like you are somebody else, I'm somebody else, you know. For convenience, that's okay, you know. But in reality, we are all the same. Literally, I mean, I'm saying literally. If you were to look at, well, genetically we know now through Genome Project, 99.9% genetically we are same.
Everybody is different from a rat.
From rat we are slightly different.
Half a percent.
Much.
Half a percent.
0.2%. Yeah, 99.7% we are different from the other animals. But 99.9%, believe it or not, we are same. I mean, just look at yourself and for a moment look through yourself. Let's say we remove the skin here, everybody's skin. What will you see? Same, everything is same, okay? Well, you work in the medical field, what would you see if you were to x-ray everybody?
It depends what sort of x-rays you would use. With MRI you would be able to see bone and different
but same.
Tissue, but yeah.
You will see the
same.
Bones in everybody, you will see the tissue, you will see the guts, you will see phelum, everything just same. Everything is same. We're so deluded in thinking that we're different, you know.
Actually, in terms of, when you say x-ray, it's actually kind of a neat metaphor. Also in terms of talking about the self and the difficulty of the language about talking about the self, because if I was talking to someone who I'd never heard of an x-ray, you know, they live somewhere, and they said to me, can you smell x-rays? No.
Mm-hmm.
Can you taste them? No. Right. Can you hold them? No.
No.
So they look at me and say, well, they're not real. And I say, yeah, they're real. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It's an interesting discussion
very good.
The language
yeah.
and the complexity, mm-hmm. which I think goes back to what we're trying to do here in terms of having some language around understanding what's witness in the universe. Or
Right. We're trying to purify our vision. You know, we're trying to develop that x-ray vision maybe, you know, to look through. And the reason I mentioned skin is because really our differences are skin deep. Literally, you know. Like I said, remove the skin, you will see everybody is same, you know. So skin deep, that's all the differences are. And if you were to look through the skin, that difference also goes away, you know. Because it's made up of the same stuff. That your skin is made up of same stuff as my skin. Body, right? Mind, same thing. You know, when you're angry, do you feel good, Alan? Unpleasant. When I'm angry, I feel unpleasant. Same mind. When you're in love, you're on cloud nine, same with me. Right? When there is compassion, there is bliss. When there is hatred, there is burning. Everybody's mind works exactly the same way. Consciousness. You know, we experience everything in the same manner, right? When I touch fire, I feel heat. I experience heat. You touch fire, you experience heat. Right? Water, the wetness of the water, everybody experiences the same way, you know? So, everything is same, really. So that's one thing. Second thing is this delusion that I am this body, okay? What can we call ourselves, call something as mine? Tell me. At least I think that if I can have unchallengeable control over something, then I can call it mine. What kind of control we have on this body? Can you stop it from aging? Yeah?
We can make it sit for half an hour.
We have no control over our body, guys.
But what is this thing called the mind?
Sorry?
What is this thing called the mind?
Sure, yeah. We'll get back to the body part, but mind.
For
good
example,
question.
He's in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
if I hurt my thumb, surgery can be performed on my thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Can a surgeon perform surgery on the mind?
Yes.
Where?
But that surgeon is you.
What part of the body is the mind?
That surgeon is you. That's the difference between material and non-material phenomena.
Because there's an interesting question, because two surgeons were having this discussion. One was a complete atheist.
Right.
He was a neurosurgeon. And one was a very devout spiritual person, and he was a heart surgeon.
Right.
The heart surgeon was the atheist.
Mm-hmm.
And heart surgeon tells the neurosurgeon, I performed so many heart transplants, this and this. I know what the heart is. But what is this mind thing? You're a neurosurgeon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a neurosurgeon, I've never seen this mind thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, we're going to talk about the difference between mind and brain and everything.
So the problem is many of us get confused or entrapped, so to speak.
Is it worse?
In this mind, what is this mind and what is this earth?
Right. So we're going to experientially understand everything.
And
the world.
To me, the rebirth process is a twofold process, or reincarnation, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
One is the rebirth is we are compelled to do the rebirth thing because of our karma, our experiences, unfinished business in this world, whatever.
Right.
The other thing is, if you look at the Judeo-Christian view of death or heaven, to me that sounds like a state of perpetual assisted living. And many of us say, okay, I've been there, I don't want to be this perpetual assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
I want some challenges here.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. That's good. But going back to your question of mind, I'll quickly define what mind is. So when you look at a flower, okay, and you say, beautiful flower, right? So that which sees the flower is consciousness. It's called eye consciousness. Okay, you're experiencing the flower, right? And that which says it's beautiful is the mind. You're qualifying your experience, beautiful flower, right? Consciousness sees flower as flower, mind makes it beautiful. So that which qualifies the consciousness is mind, in a very simple philosophical terms.
It's a thought.
Right, it's a thought which qualifies the consciousness, it qualifies your experience. That is very important. And we're going to go deep into the mind phenomena, deep into the body phenomena and consciousness phenomena. And we're going to discover that mind is actually made up of 52 intrinsic phenomena. We call it mental elements. There are 52 intrinsic mental phenomena that are collectively known as mind. Okay, so like thinking is one phenomena, feeling, perception, attention, volition, greed, hatred, delusion, compassion, loving-kindness, so on and so forth. There are a total of 52 mental phenomena that are collectively known as mind. Similarly, there are 28 material phenomena that are collectively known as body. And there are 121 categories of experiences or cognitions that are collectively known as consciousness. That's our soul journey. Why we are going to explore these three elements of soul, body, mind, consciousness, so deeply, so that we can find out where all the problems are, you know? All our problems are at the level of body or mind or consciousness, right? Everybody would agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Unless we explore these three phenomena thoroughly, we won't be able to find out the causes of the problems, you know? So that's what our journey is going to be. And some of these questions will be answered more thoroughly, like rebirth and this phenomenon. It's a very logical phenomenon, and we'll talk about what exactly happens at the level of body, mind, consciousness. What happens before the moment of birth, what happens before the moment of death, what happens at the moment of death, what happens immediately after the moment of death, how the subconscious consciousness turns into consciousness. We're going to talk about all that, the whole thing.
How do you know all that?
Sorry?
How do you know all that?
How do we
know? How do we know that? I mean, nobody's died and come back. I mean, not that we remember.
Actually, people have died and come back.
Yeah, that's true.
But we're going to know it through meditation. We're going to actually experience, for example, the phenomenon of relinquishment, whether it is or delight or impermanence. You actually experienced it, right? Every breath that came ceased. Mm-hmm. None of the breath went on forever. So now you know that impermanence is a real thing. When you observe your thoughts, you will realize the same thing. Similarly, you're going to observe death through meditation, you're going to observe rebirth through meditation. And that's the beauty of...
Yogananda was an enlightened master, so he knew a lot of things. Somebody asked the same question to him, why is there a rebirth? What is rebirth? Mm-hmm. So his answer was that when somebody dies, the soul, very different than what you're saying, the soul is there, and the soul after some time wants to go back to this worldly pleasures. And that's when it goes into the womb of a person. Mm-hmm. The moment it goes there, that is the most difficult time a soul can ever have. So after having gone there, you know, because for 9 months there's really nothing to do, you know, you're totally dependent on it. And so then when it is time for the birth, a lot of everybody thinks that, you know, when the baby comes out, it's because of the, you know, the difficult thing, but that's not why the baby is primarily crying. The baby is primarily crying because now the baby, the soul knows how difficult life was when it was born last time. You know, growing from being a baby to a, you know, all those things. And that's primarily the reason why the child who is being born cried. Remembering that I have to now go.
Why did I do that again?
All what I had gone previous life.
Right.
And then when the baby is born, you know, you for a long time you see a child smiling and crying, and this is all his remembrances from the last life that he had. Different again than what you were saying. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the person has to forget that because, and that's nature, because the person cannot be loving to mother, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if he remembers his mother from the previous birth and this, so that is the time when, you know, when a baby is growing up, that slowly and gradually all the remembrances from the last birth actually goes away.
What to talk about last birth or this birth, even if you look in your this birth, current lifespan, you will see that the present is there because of the past. The future will be the result of the present. Just this life, you know, you'll notice. So, birth and death, these are just boundary conditions, transformational conditions. Life is a phenomenon, it's a flow, you know. So, like you're saying, same thing you will notice in this current lifespan. And when you understand the boundary conditions, then the fear of death goes away. It's like just flowing, you know.
The person who dies isn't crying anymore. Everybody else around him is.
Right. But also, I think, as Pradeep says, part of the problem is that the child begins to cry because now I say, oh my God, assisted living was not bad.
That's perfect.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.